Coors Light presents To Chill or Not to Chill. When your friend bets against your team, end the friendship. Or choose chill because you're drinking Coors Light with your buddy. Coors Light, choose chill. Celebrate responsibly. 2024 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
We're getting you ready for the game on The Build Up with news from around the league, interviews, highlights, and more. Here's your host, Ted Ramey.
All right, what's happening, everybody? And welcome. You are on The Build Up as we get ready for tonight's game against Columbus. And we are looking at a little bit of news coming out of today's morning skate. Jake Wallman is a healthy scratch. That's a coach's decision. According to our friend Sheng Peng of San Jose Hockey Now and NBC Sports California, Warsawski didn't want to go further into it and had nothing to do with the awkward hit that he had in the last game. Warsawski also said that Ethan Cardwell and Daniil Gushin are likely sent down. And tonight we will see the return of Macklin Celebrini and Ty Dellandrea. So obviously a lot of opinions and hope of what we're going to see out of Macklin Celebrini. But let's take a look at tonight's opposition as we are now joined by the radio play-by-play announcer for the Columbus Blue Jackets, Bob McGilligan. Bob, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, actually. You know, it's always good to take a break from the Midwest and get out to the West Coast, so no complaints.
And I assume for the Blue Jackets, they are looking to get back on the winning side of things after a recent two-game slide.
Yeah, I mean, they've been rolling along pretty well. Started the season 5-3-1, and then ran into what turned out to be a couple of juggernauts in the Winnipeg Jets last Friday night, and then had to go into Washington less than 24 hours later. Again, got a team that was playing well and just didn't handle it the right way. So, you know, it's a 500 record at 5-5-1 coming into this game. But as you said, they had the day off Sunday, had a little practice yesterday before getting on the plane to come out here. So I know this for a fact. This group is very eager to get back to what they were doing prior to last Friday night. And it's their first real test of adversity as a team so far in this young season.
Obviously, the storyline going into the season was marked by tragedy that I'm sure you talked about enough, and I don't want to make you get into it. But just the team is – how have they handled everything up to this point? I mean, October hockey is always a little bit topsy-turvy. Did they handle things better than you expected them to?
Yeah, they really did. You know, when you lose not just a player, but you lose a person like Johnny Gaudreau was – and, you know, some of the guys had known his brother, Matthew, who was killed in the same tragic accident. It was extremely tough for everybody. And, you know, it's been kind of inspiring in some ways to see the way that the guys have galvanized and the way that they're dedicating, the way they play and the effort that they play with to be just like Johnny Gaudreau was as a hockey player, not just in the NHL, but from the time he was a kid to college to the NHL. So it is tragedy has brought this group together. It was already a pretty tight group, but that brought it together even more tightly. And then even the guys that were added from the outside, Sean Monahan was brought in here specifically to be the number one centerman and would have played with Johnny Gaudreau, his longtime friend and former teammate with the Calgary Flames. And, you know, all of a sudden, the plans went from let's raise our kids who are the same age together in Columbus to Johnny not being there at all. And I think Sean has been a very major reason as to why this group has responded the way that it has, because he knows Johnny so well for so many years that I think he really just set a tone in how he should be remembered in the way that they work and perform and have fun. So somehow they've taken a terrible situation and they've made it, they've done the best that they could with it. And I'm really amazed at the way that they have, they as individuals and as, you know, guys with individual families have really come together as one big group.
Dean Evason is one of our favorites here in San Jose, just such an engaging character, such a unique individual who's experienced in the NHL as a player and a head coach. And I guess if there was going to be any head coach to handle a situation like this, you couldn't ask for somebody any more than Dean Evason. And how much credit goes to him for helping the team manage the roller coaster that has been the season up to this point?
Well, a lot of it does, without question. Also, Don Waddell, who's mm-hmm. the general manager of the Blue Jackets now, he went through a similar situation when he was the general manager of the Atlanta Thrashers with a player, you know, getting killed, and then so he's been through it before. So he went back to how that situation was handled with the family and everything. And then Dean is just a total team guy. What you were just asking me about earlier about the way this team has come together. I mean, when you have a coach that is all about team over individual, and then you have a tragedy like that, it really drives home that theme. I think for a player, it's a lot easier to buy into that aspect of things because it's a great example of, you know, there are things bigger than playing hockey here. And we got to do this all together. And so that's Dean's way of going about things anyway. So he has been a huge help.
Yeah. And Dean, just as an individual, I mean, he's got to be fun for you to have as the head coach.
Well, some days. No, I'm just kidding. No, and I say that because he was giving me grief during the morning skate today about whether it was his turn to be interviewed or not with me. And but it was all in fun. And yes, he is he's an entertaining guy to have around. But more than being an entertaining guy, he's a guy that is demanding. But I like the way that he demands things of people, not just players. Mm-hmm. You know, the best coaches in this game are the best people in this game. I think that's fair to say. And you want those people to be, I think I'm like the players when it comes to this kind of stuff. Like you can be upfront and frank and honest with me and tell me what's going on. Just be honest with me. I may not like it, but mm-hmm. we'll get through it. That's okay. And that's how he is with the players. And that's how he is with everybody around. And then when you mix in how funny he can be and some of the crazy stuff that he says, that just really is a cherry on top.
How has it been with Kevin LeBanc so far on the Blue Jackets? Because he was one of my favorites for so long in San Jose. He wasn't really finding a spot with the recent administration, but you know he's racking up points so far this year, and I think that there's still many untapped angles of his game that in the right system can really be taken advantage of.
Funny you say that because, you know, Kevin has been in and out of the lineup. There haven't been that many games, but he's been out for a couple of games because, you know, there's just some, you got one extra forward, one extra D man right now mm-hmm. on this team. So somebody's got to get in, somebody's got to come out. And so he's come out a couple of times, but he also didn't come in until right before the season started.
Right.
So he didn't get to spend the entire training camp with the team and the coaches like everybody else did. So it's a little bit of a somewhat of a learning process for him. But as you said, I was thinking about this the other day. I look down and all of a sudden I look at assists and I'm like, this guy is just quietly picking up points. I mean, mm-hmm. that's what he does. Right. So I think it is I think it is a perfect situation for the Blue Jackets. They needed a forward and he was on that PTO with New Jersey and he was not signing with New Jersey. And it was a guy that not only is just available, but I mean, a guy that has a wealth of National Hockey League experience and who played here, as you said, for a long time and did a lot of good things here. That's the kind of player that isn't just usually sitting out there when you need somebody. So Kevin has been very good here.
Let's talk about the goalie tandem. I know Daniil's numbers are a little bit skewed by that performance against Winnipeg, of which last line of defense, so the goalie gets too much blame in those credits. But what have you seen from the two guys through 11 games?
Yeah, well, it just kind of stunk because one of the guys got lit up on one night and then the other one went in the next night and the same team performance happened. And so they just basically both had to wear it in those situations last weekend. But that being said, numbers aside, I think they both played pretty well. Elvis Merzlikin started the year and lost his first two, but they were both very winnable games. No fault of his. Then last week, he had two really good games. He came 27 seconds from shutting out Edmonton, and then mm-hmm. in the very next start, two nights later, he did shut out the New York Islanders. So, you know, he's been good. I think with Elvis, he's been a lot more quiet and compact. He's a very athletic guy, but he's a very emotional guy. And sometimes if a team's struggling in front of him, he will tend to try to do a little bit too much. And sometimes it helps. But other times it takes him out of position and comes back to bite him. So I think he's been really quiet in the way that he's played this year, and that's a good thing. That's a compliment to him. And Daniil Tarasov is a guy that has, for years, he's had a ton of upside. His problem has been injuries. He's healthy right now. I think he's played some good games. There were some games where he won 6-4, where he just happened to get a lot of goal support. You know, all in all, that biggest question mark going into the season was the goaltending with this team and where is it and how good is it and all that stuff. And I think it has been one of the lesser problems on the list. They both played well.
Let's talk special teams, power play right now. Columbus in the middle third. What have you seen up to this point?
I saw them start really hot on the power play and then cool off with it. And, you know, some of those, you know how this goes too. Some of those power plays, like you're rolling to start the season, then all of a sudden your next three power plays are 20 to 40 seconds or abbreviated power plays and you don't get anything. And, and then the numbers start to go down. But it's okay. I think this, the power play here, there's not really top skilled guys. I mean, Patrick Laine's not here anymore. You knew Patrick Laine was going to set up like Ovechkin and take those one timers. And, we don't have guys. We don't have Patrick Laine. We don't have Johnny Gaudreau, a really super talented guy. So now the power play has to work, and it's got to work hard. Now, there are guys out there that have the potential to develop into players like that. I think Yegor Chinnikov, definitely. He's got a great shot. Kirill Marchenko is a very talented guy, but they're just not at that level yet. So you rely upon guys like Zach Werenski, who does a fantastic job of everything he does, but running the power play is right up there for them. But they've got to grind it out a little bit when it comes to playing with the man advantage.
And then on the kill, sitting right about even with San Jose at 80%, is it satisfactory? Is it just what you need it to be right now? Or is it, like most kills, a work in progress still in the early parts of the season?
Yeah, I think it's still a work in progress in some ways. I mean, it started, Kent Johnson won a penalty killing role out of training camp. Who'd have thought it? I mean, he didn't do it in college, but he did a good job in the preseason, and he came out of camp being a penalty killer, and then he got hurt early on. And so now they have to mix somebody else in there and do that. But it is a work in progress, but for a team that needs to be just better overall defensively, that area has got to get better too.
What's your biggest question with regards to the team at this point?
The consistency factor jumped up in these last two games. I don't want to say that they went up against two good teams and as the schedule gets tougher, are you in trouble? I can't say that because they beat up on Toronto. They beat up on Edmonton. So they've beaten good teams, and they've done those two games in particular handily beat up on good teams. So it's about the consistency. And I think when you look at Winnipeg, big and strong and fast, and they got, you know, a lot of they check a lot of boxes. And then you go into Washington, and even though they've retooled a little bit, you know, they were doing some of the same thing. So the thing is the consistency. Okay, you know, even the games they won, as I said, they won a couple of games 6-4 early on. Those went down as wins. Maybe the four goals was two more than you wanted to give up in that. So they need to they just need to play the same way night in and night out. It's very obvious with this team when they play their game and when they're playing Dean Evason's system and they're working at it. They can skate and play with anybody. When they get away from it, they get exposed quickly. So the consistency has got to be, you got to play it every night. You got to play it to the best that you possibly can every night.
What are your perceptions of where the San Jose Sharks are at this point? Because we always wonder how the news and the overall just message of what's going on in San Jose, how it translates to the rest of the hockey world. Because we know that, you know, on the West Coast, the games happen later and not everything, you know, not all news disseminates the same. It's different when, you know, games are getting off 7 o'clock here, but at 9, they're 10 o'clock at night in your part.
Well, I'll tell you this. I know that obviously this is a team that's going through a full and honest rebuild, right? I mean, tear it down to the studs and put it back together and do that through the draft. But I know that, you know, Will Smith and Macklin Celebrini, who were taken in each of the last two drafts, are very talented players. I know Celebrini's supposed to be coming back into the lineup here today. So I'm looking forward to seeing him play, quite frankly. But with players like that, you know that this team is going to start moving in the right direction. Then I look through the rest of the lineup and I'm like, you know, this team's 3-8-2, but you don't just show up and get a win against this team. I mean, there's bona fide NHL players top to bottom. They've been around the league. They've been with other teams. Alexander Wenberg is one that jumps out at me because he was with us for a long time there. So there's good experience there. And I mean, it's to me, looking at it from the outside, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong on this. Look, you got two NHL goaltenders. You got an NHL lineup. It's just that, you know, I'm sure there's still some gelling factor. that's got to go on here. But this is a team that looks to me like it should be able to compete night in and night out.
Yeah, it's. I know everyone looked at the 0-7-2 start, but there was many games in that stretch where the Sharks felt like they should have walked away with 2 points. And I think that was the frustrating thing, Bob, was that everyone from, you know, who's not immediately on the Pacific Coast looks and sees a similar start to a year ago in which they started off 11 winless before they got their first win and sees that parallel. But for those of us who were right up in close, we put the two together, the juxtaposition of the two seasons couldn't be more different, even though there are similar results on the table through those 9 games. So it was nice for them to get that little bit of momentum going. But, you know, you brought up Will Smith and Mack and Celebrini, and, you know, obviously you've been at this a while. And do you ever worry about the dangers of putting so much emphasis on the young players? Because obviously in all sports, there's such a youth movement that's gone on. And I always find it interesting that if we talk about young players, they say, oh, well, we don't want to put them out there too early and ruin their confidence. But then I hold that up against what happens in the NBA and the NFL, where they just say, hey, they're coming out of the draft, put them right up there and let them go out there and sink or swim. Well, what's your reaction to it?
I don't know. I'm so tainted on this one because I spent so much time in the East Coast Hockey League and the American mm-hmm. Hockey League. So, you know, when you've gone through that grind and when you get to the National Hockey League, I think there are so many things that you realize that you learned at those levels that, man, I'm glad I experienced that there, you know, right. And players will tell you that. And it's now basically, yes, older players that will tell you that, because guys today don't even go to the American Hockey League anymore. So it seems in some cases, but that being said, you know, if you're talented enough to be here, well then be here, you know, and not everyone is going to take on the league and just dominate. Not everybody's a Sidney Crosby coming in at 18 years old and being that guy. I mean, even if you look at Connor Bedard's done some great things, but, you know, I mean, still, you're 18 years old and you're right. playing against men in the best league in the world. So there's an adjustment factor. To me, it's more like where are you mentally almost? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You're 18 years old. Are you going to be able to be, can you handle getting your lunch fed to you every day by these guys that are 25, 28, 30 years old? And can you handle the development it's going to take at this highest level? Because some guys can, right? Some guys just bounce back. It doesn't faze them. Other guys start to question, and then you can see it in their game. And then sometimes they do wind up getting sent down for a bit until they find that confidence again. So if you have confident guys that have talent and they can handle the mental part of it, the physical part obviously will come. I mean, you're eventually going to get older and you're going to work out and you're going to get bigger and stronger and all that stuff. But, you know, if you can, if you're getting pushed around, but you can just set that aside in your mind and say, look, okay, maybe I'm not putting up the numbers that I think I should, or I know I can, or that I have before, whatever like that, but I'm learning here. And I'm just going to get better and better. If you get those guys that are focused like that mentally, then that's exactly what's going to happen to them, in my opinion. So, look, you're right. I can sit here and say everybody should go to the American Hockey League for at least a full season. They should learn a lot of the things they don't know, but that's not the way the game works anymore. Yeah. If you're talented, if you're good, you're going to step right into the league. So, you know, just like I said, for me, how are you as a person? I need to know you pretty well. I want to know you mentally. I want to know the kind of guy I'm dealing with. If you're going to be able to deal with adversity and failure and get better from it, are you going to get better from it? Or is it going to take you back a couple of pegs? And as long as you're going to get better, you're my guy. I don't care if you're 18 or you're 22 or you're going in my lineup and you're going to learn.
Bob, great stuff. I know you got stuff to do, so I will let you go, but thank you for your time as always and have a great broadcast tonight.
Thank you very much. I always enjoy catching up with you.
Again, that is Bob McElligott, the radio play-by-play announcer for the Columbus Blue Jackets. Always great chatting with Bob, and it should be a good matchup tonight, and I hope that we'll be able to see Kevin LeBanc, because I always enjoyed the banker in his time with San Jose, but we are just about out of time. Pre-game coverage at 7 o'clock, go time 7:30 from the Sharks Audio Network as the San Jose Sharks play host to the Columbus Blue Jackets, and then I'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. as we look back at tonight's game on Morning Tide. So Mac is back. It's the Sharks and the Blue Jackets on a Tuesday night tilt to distract us from election coverage. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yend.